This is Charlottesville Tomorrow. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit organization engaging the public on critical quality of life issues so we make informed choices for our community's future. Visit us on the web at SeavilleTomorrow.org. On November 3, 2015, voters in the city of Charlottesville go to the polls to elect their representatives to 4 seats on the Charlottesville School Board. This recording is Brian Wheeler's August 24, 2015 interview with Adam Hastings. Other candidates in this race include Sherry Kraft, incumbent Amy Laufer, and incumbent Jennifer McKeever. Dr. Hastings, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and recording and written transcript for this interview will be available online. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of the Nonpartisan Voter Guide being co-produced by Charlottesville Tomorrow, The Daily Progress, and the League of Women Voters. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues primarily related to land use, transportation, public education, and community design. As you are aware, the first two questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. For the others, you have been provided only the topic in advance. All Charlottesville School Board candidates will be asked the same questions. We ask that you keep these questions confidential until all candidates have been interviewed. Each candidate will be provided an opportunity to review the excerpts selected for the voter guide before its publication. Are you ready to start?
Yes, sir.
Question number one. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on the Charlottesville School Board.
Brian, I've been a classroom teacher, a department chairperson, a grade level chairperson, a building level administrator, a central office administrator, and now I'm out of K-12 and I work in the next step, which is community college education. I'm an educator. I've been doing this now. I'm starting my 12th year in public education, and I love it. And the great thing about living in Charlottesville is we're a small community. I've had a chance to really get to know the people, really get to know the school system. I think I possess a level of knowledge of the Charlottesville City Schools that most people who are not employees of the school system don't possess. And I'm really excited to get in and do some work, both as a former teacher, as a former administrator, and now as a future or as a current parent, but a current parent of a future student of the Charlottesville City Public Schools. On top of that, my previous post was as the director at K-Tech. And as the director at K-Tech, the K-Tech Center Board is comprised of city and county school board members. And as the director, I had a chance to work very closely with school board members, both from the city and the county. And I can count them as my friends, I can count them as my colleagues, and I've really appreciated the work that they've done, and I think that I can contribute at a level that they've contributed.
Question number two, what is your top priority for action by the school board during the next 4 years?
I think we need to create a school system that has both short and long-term financial stability at a level that can create educational opportunities for all students, similar to what is currently in place for those students who are engaging in work in the Sigma Lab. But that kind of innovation in education needs to be happening for all students. And we need a funding formula and a budget and a financial situation that makes that a reality for every single student. I don't think we're there right now.
And maybe you could just add what the Sigma Lab is.
The Sigma Lab is Charlottesville's, well, you know what it is? It's the most innovative thing happening in public education in Central Virginia right now. They have the absolute best teacher, Matt Shields, who has turned Charlottesville High School from a school that was focused on, that really still is, but a school that was a sports school and a fine arts school, to really a top science, engineering, manufacturing, making school. It's exciting. And it's something that's going to transform the way education happens at CHS. At its core, it's a bunch of rooms with a bunch of equipment in it. But what it's really going to be is a place where students really approach learning in a whole new way that uses their hands to get to their minds at a highly technical level that takes learning and really applies it in a way that we just have never been able to do in traditional education. And it's happening there, and it needs to happen for all kids in all classrooms at all levels and all schools.
Question number three. Business leaders and social service agencies have told local government that new investments are sorely needed in the area of early childhood education. Will you make pre-K education and quality child care a priority, and if so, how?
Absolutely. pre-K education is expensive. Quality childcare is expensive. But if we're going to create a school system that truly serves our community, they need to be in there. They need to be a part of our approach to teaching the whole child and teaching the child from birth all the way through lifelong learning. To me, the how is getting it as part of our finances. It needs to be something that's in the budget, that's long-term funded. I don't know the answer as to where we get the funds right now because we've been struggling with it as a community for years, absolutely for years. But I know that when our best prepared students in our community are the ones who have had access to high quality education from birth through schooling, when I know that that's been our situation for our best prepared students, I know that it's the answer for our least prepared students. And we need to find a way to get high quality education to those students as soon as possible. And I think pre-K and child care are the answer. You know, I have a 4-month-old, soon to be 5-month-old. And childcare scares me. I don't know how my wife and I afford it, and we have college educations and a great job. And I cannot imagine staring down trying to find good quality childcare in this town if you didn't have the financial resources and how your child could ever be prepared for school, because it scares me as an educator who has plenty of resources to make that happen for my child. I think it's something that we need to have available for all of our students if we really are going to have a community that we can all stand behind and say is something for all of our neighbors, not just a select few.
Question number 4. School officials have said that graduating students who are literate with technology will benefit the entire community, but many students have said that their teachers often lack the expertise, training to use the technology, and they don't want their teachers replaced by computers. Please describe the role you think technology should play in the classroom.
I can talk all day on this topic. So my dissertation was on online education. It was on high-quality leadership for online learning in schools. So it's a topic about which I'm pretty passionate, but it really boils down to something very simple. Technology can't replace high-quality teaching, but technology can enhance high-quality teaching. We live in a world that is changing in ways that we can't imagine. I mean, if you just think about it, we now have phones like they had on Star Trek where we can video chat with other people, and how much that's going to change between now and the time when today's kindergartners are adults, we probably can't even fathom. I don't think comic books can fathom how much life's going to change. As a result, we need to be creating a school system that prepares students for the inevitability of a technology-enhanced life. On top of that, we need to find teachers who can do that work. But at the end of the day, our teachers have to be awesome teachers. And if they do that through technology, terrific. And if they can't do that through technology, we need to have the resources to get them trained so that they can do that. We should never be looking to replace high-quality teachers with high-quality technology. We need to be integrating.
Question number 5. Do you support the strategic plan of the Charlottesville Albemarle Technical Education Center? And a follow-up, should KTEC build a new facility at Piedmont Virginia Community College?
Another topic about which I have a strong opinion. Yes, I do support the strategic plan of KTEC. I was very fortunate to be a part of writing that strategic plan, so I support it. We need to get to work. I mean, we're working now. PVCC is working heavily with KTEC, who's working heavily with Albemarle County and Charlottesville City. Career and technical education is something we need to work on locality-wide, statewide, nationwide, and we're doing that work now. I personally would like to see it go a little bit faster, but as somebody who's spent a decade in this business, I know that things take planning and they take procedure and they take process. We need to be training our students to be able to get middle school employment. Right now we have, in the MSA, we have some 48%, I think, of our students are graduating with a standard diploma. And if a standard diploma does not prepare one for college, and a high school diploma is not sufficient enough to get students into high quality employment, then we're missing something. We've got a gap there. So not just a skills gap, but a training gap. So we need to be creating pathways, community career pathways that prepare students from K-12 all the way into adult education to get students access to great high quality jobs. Of course, there are going to be some other changes that happen there. We need employers who offer those jobs. We need students who are willing to take those jobs. We need parents in a community that support that kind of employment. But at the end of the day, yes, I support the strategic plan. Whether or not it needs to move to Piedmont is a different question. I think that, it's been 2 years now. 2 years ago when we started that conversation, we were searching for solutions. And I think the PVCC solution was awesome. And Frank came out and said, move it on over to Piedmont. It'd be great. We'll have it there. And I think there's a logical, inherent connection between what goes on at KTEC and what goes on at PVCC. I think we have some anticipatory exploration to do, though, to decide, is that really the best use of public funds? Right now, we have a hard time getting students enrolled in the current programs. Maybe we need to review what programs we're going to offer as they best fit our community and then decide, where does that facility lie? I think facilities are a second choice. I think programming is the first choice.
Question number six. Are we recruiting the best teachers, measuring their performance effectively, and paying competitive salaries? And how do we know?
We certainly are recruiting some top-notch, exceptional teachers. But since we don't have great performance measures of how our students are doing in schools, I couldn't tell you if every teacher that we hire is a top-notch instructor. I don't know the answer to that because we don't have a measuring stick that measures that. What I do know is that we have pockets of highly innovative, highly energetic, highly successful teachers who turn out highly innovative, highly energetic, highly successful students. So we're having it. It's out there. But whether or not we're doing it wholesale, I don't know because I don't think we have that metric. Quite frankly, I don't think education schools are turning out new teachers with a skill set that we need to really push the needle on public education. I think public education is going to change in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I don't think the traditional schoolhouse model is what's going to be there. I don't know what's going to be there, but I think we're changing so quickly that knowing what I know after 1 year in higher ed, I don't think we're nimble enough and flexible enough to be changing our teacher preparation to be preparing teachers to do highly innovative work. That being said, we have some great teachers out there. At the end of the day, the way that you attract them is by creating two situations. One, a situation in which teachers can come in and use high-quality instruction and not be strung up by all of the red tape that goes on with high-stakes testing and the things that come out of the state in terms of our compliance issues and regulatory issues. Not that those aren't important, but we need to allow teachers to be innovative, to be high-quality instructors. And that's difficult to do sometimes in the culture of the bureaucratic culture of working for a state organization. The other side of it, the other scenario that we need is funding. And the reality is teachers aren't paid what they need to be paid. I don't know the answer in the long term of how we start paying teachers what we pay doctors and lawyers. I don't think we're going to figure that out probably in my tenure on the school board. But the reality is we ask an awful lot of our teachers, and we don't pay them at a level commensurate with what we pay other people who do that category of work in our society. I think what we can do as a school board is create a teaching environment and a learning environment where teachers feel supported to be innovative, where they feel encouraged to be innovative and recognized for the work that they're doing in the classroom, and that's going to go a long way. I think that what's happening at the Sigma Lab and what's happening at Buford and what happens in fine arts, I think that teachers in pockets know that if you want to go be excellent at what you do, Charlottesville is a great place to be. But we need that in every subject area for all of our schools.
Question number seven. Why do we have persistent achievement gaps? And a follow-up, what's the single most important thing you will do to close the gap?
This is a long answer, Brian. Our achievement gaps don't start in the schools. They start in our society. We have a community of have and have-nots. And I don't think that as a community we recognize everyone as neighbors. I don't think that we agree that we are all successful when we are all successful. I think it's easy to turn a blind eye at the level of prosperity that some of our neighbors do and do not have, the level of success that some of our neighbors do and do not have. That achievement gap starts out in our community. It's there. It's ever present. I saw it as I walked over here today for this interview. That heads into the schools, and our students, while they may be at separate schools at a young age, as they move their way into the middle school where we funnel everybody through the same conduit and then back out, it's stark when we walk into our school systems and see what our students are coming with, both on a material financial level, but also just on an academic preparedness level. When we're not coming in on equal footing, it's very difficult to come out on equal footing. I think the way that we solve it as a community is to look at the whole system. But in the next 4 years as a school board, we're not going to revamp the entire school system. But I do think that early childhood education, pre-K, childcare is going to go a great way to starting the creation of a scenario in which all students are coming into kindergarten on equal footing, ready to learn, ready for literacy, ready for numeracy. But it also means that we have to reach the current strategic plan goals of becoming a school system that partners with our community and where we as schools and we as families work together to create a really strong community. The great thing about Charlottesville is we're so small. We only have one high school. We only have one middle school. I guess if you count Walker and Buford too, but we really only have one middle school system. The great thing about our size, is that we have the ability to do whatever we want. We don't have that many masters in this town. We can choose our own destiny, whereas a larger school district, I think, would have a harder time with that. But I think we're going to have to make a decision, a conscious effort, that for those students who start in our system, we need to create an educational program for them so that they come in on equal footing and they have a chance to keep growing through that the whole way. But it's going to be a long time coming. It's not a one-year solution. If anything, if we start a kindergarten, it's a 13-year solution. But that requires a lot of long-term stick-to-itness. It requires a lot of community focus. And I think in this community, we have a lot of different issues that pop up a lot, and I think we have a lot of issue fatigue. I think we deal with an issue for a while, and then we say, all right, we've dealt with that one enough. Let's move on to the next. I think the success of our community is going to rest on whether or not we can solve that have and have not issue that plagues us. And our school system can be a major player in that, but we have to start and then we have to stick with it. We have to do it at a generational level, and there's real work to be done there.
Question number 8. Describe a part of the school division that would benefit from increased cooperation by the city, county, and or the University of Virginia, and that you would make a priority.
Actually, I think this is a place from a teacher standpoint where we could really work to attract high-quality teachers. Let's keep it in the pre-K realm. So at UVA, we have the top, Bob Pianta, the dean of the Curry School, is the top early childhood ed researcher, period. He and Bridget Hamry work together, and they churn out the best, highest quality research on pre-K and early childhood education there is. We have two school systems that both have a tremendous need for early childhood education improvements, both in quantity and quality. And we have a need to attract and train teachers who can do that work, both from the traditional teacher core and from our folks who are working in hourly wage positions right now who just need training to move pre-K programs from less of a daycare model to more of a school model. I'm the first one to tell you that I think that at that age, we don't need to be cramming reading down the throats of two-year-olds and say you will be preparing for your SATs. I think play is huge and let's just be kids. But there's a science to this. There's a way that we train people to be there's a way that we work with students to get them school ready, and there's a way that we train faculty to really be high-quality educators. We have the research base. If we can get the funding together and we can really build out the schools and the pre-K options, we have that base. And then as we go to recruit faculty and we go to recruit teachers, we have that group. If we can put those together and work together and train together and share lessons with each other, I think it could be a really cool model where we work with all kids in our community. We certainly don't have the facilities set up right now at a place where we can just have one big center where every kid goes. It's going to be disjointed. It's going to need to be a system of efforts. And I think there's just no reason why if we're doing this in both divisions and we have the expertise at the university that we just don't do it together, especially with other for-profit institutions that exist in town who do that work. Plus, we have some high-quality preschools in town who do that work. Creating that kind of community in our community around pre-K would be pretty neat. Be fun work, quite frankly. We're already doing it at other levels. I mean, we do it at our higher level engineering, our higher level transfer and dual enrollment. We do it there where we work together. We jointly apply for grants. We go after joint funding. So we recognize the importance of that. Now I think we need to take that muscle and apply it towards some more emerging issues.
Question number 9. Do you support the grade reconfiguration plan for city schools such that Buford will house grades 6 through 8 as the only middle school? And if so, how will that be funded, and can it happen in your next term?
So I recognize this is a hot-button issue and that we have a community that values its schools as community schools, where we recognize that different schools have the flavor of their community and that they really embody a lot of what goes on in different areas. And even in the space of small Charlottesville, that we have distinct pockets of communities and identities. In this case, though, as somebody who went through a traditional 6-8 middle school program, and as an education, well, former, I guess I don't do it anymore, but as an education researcher who looked at it, our nation, even though the pendulum swings, our nation is pretty clear that 6-9 middle school education is how we should be doing middle school education. So in that regard, 6-8, not 6-9, I really support centralizing middle school into one place. I'll add two final reasons onto that. The first one is transitions. Teenagers stink at transitions. And when our students have to go from school to school to school to school, it's almost like saying to we think about a student who has to switch schools along their progression and the kind of trauma that puts a student through, where they have to learn the whole new lay of the land, they have to learn the whole new set of faculty, they lose their advisors, they lose their counselors, they lose their support staff. Limiting those transitions, to me, is huge. And so if we can consolidate from a into a system where we have one elementary school, or students attend one elementary school, one middle school, and one high school, I think helps students just as they navigate their own educational system. On top of that, there's the funding issue. We pay to run two physical plants, two sets of administration, two sets of wage employees that operate two separate schools in this district. And if there's a way that we can consolidate from a funding standpoint to make one more financially responsible decision in order to run one middle school, I'm in full support of it. If it will be funded, I think in part it gets funded by trying to approach a cost-neutral scenario where you reduce one school and funnel that funding into one new school. I think, though, that there's an opportunity. Let me say this differently. Let me take a step back. I think if all we do is close Walker and open Buford and don't make any changes to Buford, then we're not going to see any improvement. And so there needs to be an approach to say, not only are we going to consolidate the schools, but the school into which we consolidate the students is going to be a school that every single student wants to go to and every single parent wants to send their student to. No slight against the faculty and staff at Buford, but I don't think you can say that right now. And I think we need to spend some time working to make Buford a world-class middle school. In that case, I don't know where the funding is going to come from. But the NSF and the NIH and a whole bunch of other foundations are out there to support that work. I think it's time that we make the decision and really move towards having a real top middle school. I think we have a top high school, and we have some top elementary schools, and we have a good middle school. But I think we need to move to the point where the middle school is an equal-sized jewel in the crown. And it's time. I don't know enough about school board operations, even though I've spent a lot of time with school boards, to know if that's realistic in 4 years. We're a community that values deliberation. We're a community that values process, that values collaboration and people getting involved. We've been working on that Belmont Bridge since I've lived in town, and I can't imagine if we can't agree on a bridge how much time it would take us to work to agree on changing the school. That being said, we have the faculty right now. We have people. We have the expertise from a teaching level. We have the expertise from an administrative level. We have some new change coming to both the city council and the city school board. I think this would be a very ripe time to go forward and to move and to do this work. But people are going to be reluctant, because if we keep things as is and we just close the school, nobody's going to buy in. It's real work. It's scary work.
Question number 10. What steps should city council and the school board take to help build a more sustainable school budget?
My wife was on the Blue Ribbon Commission, and so I got a very close-up look as to how that worked. Honestly, to me, it's a short answer. Follow the steps in the Blue Ribbon Commission recommendations. We went out, we found the right minds to work on the problem, we found a solution, we proposed a solution, and then we took the solution and we put it on the shelf. So if that is our best attempt at how we find financial stability and fiscal stability for our community, then that's what we need to do. It's frustrating, I think, to be in a situation where we go do the research, we do the work, we put it out to the community, we get input, we get right to the starting line, and then we say, you know what, let's just think about this a little bit longer. I think it's time that we make some decisions. We have some big issues around finances. We're going to consistently get to the composite index and the revenue sharing and all those issues. But if we can't fix our own internal issues on finances, I think it's going to be very difficult to approach the broader issues that affect the university's involvement and the county's involvement. And I think the answer is to follow what it says in the Blue Ribbon Commission report. And if we don't like what it says, then we need to be honest with ourselves as to did we have a different set of objectives? And if so, let's publish those and flesh them out and get community feedback and go forward. Or I don't want to do it, but if that commission wasn't the right group of people, then we need to get the right group of people in the room. But right now, maybe I'm biased because I saw some of the, or at least I heard over the dinner table, some of the internal workings. I think they did a good job. I think they brought the right people together to look at the situation, and I think it's time. I will say that I have tremendous confidence in our current superintendent and in Ed Gillespie and in the people that are doing the finances for the school division. And if we can marry that with what's in the report, we've got to do it. We can't keep asking the question of how do we find financial stability, coming up with an answer, and then not enacting it. So,
Adam Hastings, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Thanks.